Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So I brought the Samyutta Nikaya with me. So if I had to pick my two favorite books from the early Buddhist texts, it's this one and also the Anguttara Nikaya, which is also just about this thick. And so this one, okay, so the Anguttara Nikaya covers this really broad range of topics. It's just kind of like scattered, you know, all over the place as to all the topics. And then the Samyutta Nikaya picks a number of themes. And then for each theme, it tries to kind of look at that theme from a number of different angles. You know, each theme being something worth exploring more in depth. So the Samyutta means connected discourses. Each of these themes has got some connected suttas collected around it. So I'm going to read kind of a stock explanation of the first four jhanas. This stock, you know, kind of explanation, it's in the suttas many times. Okay, so there are nine jhanas, but I'm just going to first talk about the first four. And if you only ever achieve these first four, that's enough to attain Nibbana. Okay, and got good at them. Okay, this is from the Jhana Samyutta, the connected discourses on the jhanas. We're on page 1762. Okay, Sutta 1. At Savatthi, there the Blessed One said this, Bhikkhus, there are these four jhanas. What for? Here, bhikkhus, secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in the first jhana, which is accompanied by thought and examination, with rapture and happiness born of seclusion. With the subsiding of thought and examination, he enters and dwells in the second jhana, which has internal confidence and unification of mind, is without thought and examination, and has rapture and happiness born of concentration. With the fading away as well of rapture, he dwells equanimous, and mindful and clearly comprehending, he experiences happiness with the body. He enters and dwells in the third jhana, of which the noble ones declare, he is equanimous, mindful, one who dwells happily. With the abandoning of pleasure and pain, and with the previous passing away of joy and displeasure, he enters and dwells in the fourth jhana, which is neither painful nor pleasant, and includes the purification of mindfulness by equanimity. These are the four jhanas. Bhikkhus, just as the river Ganges slants, slopes, and inclines towards the east, so too a bhikkhu who develops and cultivates the four jhanas slants, slopes, and inclines towards Nibbana. And how, bhikkhus, does a bhikkhu who develops and cultivates the four jhanas slant, slope, and incline towards Nibbana? Here, bhikkhus, secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, a bhikkhu enters and dwells in the first jhana. And then the same description is given, the second jhana, same description, the third jhana, same description, the fourth jhana. It is in this way, bhikkhus, that a bhikkhu who develops and cultivates the four jhanas slants, slopes, and inclines towards nibbana. Okay, so that's kind of the stock description of it. Okay, and I also found a stock description of the remaining five jhanas, the so-called arupa jhanas, the formless jhanas they're called sometimes. Okay, now these arupa jhanas are again mentioned in many places. And this example I just sort of found from I looked in the index of topics in the back of the book. So it's talking about the seven elements. Now, earlier in the retreat I talked about four elements, earth, air, fire, and water. We can also expand that to the six elements, adding space and consciousness itself. Now here's just sort of a random list of a different seven elements. So the Buddha, you know, he kind of makes these lists of things up a little different here and there and everywhere, okay? This is a different seven elements. We're not just adding one more thing. Okay. So this is from the Dhatu Samyutta. Dhatu means element. So these are many different suttas on elements. Okay, so this is Sutta 11. The title is Seven Elements. At Sawati, bhikkhus, there are these seven elements. What seven? The light element, the beauty element, the base of infinity of space element, the base of infinity of consciousness element, the base of nothingness element, the base of neither perception nor non-perception element, the cessation of perception and feeling element. These are the seven elements. When this was said, a certain bhikkhu asked the Blessed One, Venerable Sir, as to the light element, and then he lists all seven elements, the cessation of perception and feeling element, in dependence on what are these elements discerned? Bhikkhu, the light element is discerned in dependence on darkness. The beauty element is discerned in dependence on foulness. The base of infinity of space element is discerned in dependence on form. The base of the infinity of consciousness element is discerned in dependence on the base of infinity of space. The base of nothingness element is discerned in dependence on the base of the infinity of consciousness. The base of neither perception nor non-perception element is discerned in dependence on the base of nothingness. The cessation of perception and feeling element is discerned in dependence on cessation. But Venerable Sir, as to the light element, list all seven again, the cessation of perception and feeling element, how is the attainment of these elements to be attained? The light element, the beauty element, the base of the infinity of space element, the base of infinity of consciousness element, and the base of nothingness element. These elements are to be attained as attainments with perception. The base of neither perception nor non-perception element. This element is to be attained as an attainment with a residue of formations. The cessation of perception and feeling element. This element is to be attained as an attainment of cessation. Okay. Maybe that wasn't the best sutta to read you to get kind of the stock formula. But anyway, these arupa jhanas are mentioned quite a few times. That was just a quick one I looked up at lunchtime, you know. Anyway, you can attain arahantship without attaining to any of these. You just need the first four jhanas. And I'll leave it to you to go reading the suttas to find out more. But these arupa jhanas are kind of like even deeper meditations beyond the four jhanas. And they become more and more subtle, more and more refined. And there's more and more of a fading away, such that even consciousness kind of fades away to basically nothing. But it's not like you're just sort of falling asleep. It's not like one is just being like knocked out cold, you know, unconscious. It's not like you've been put under in a hospital for an operation. You know, they like just kind of put you under with anesthetist or whatever, anesthesiology, you know, when you get knocked out by the drugs. It's not like that either. Anyway, so they're very refined meditative attainments. I do have one interesting thing to say, though, about the one arupa jhana, called the base of infinity of consciousness. There's this one Buddhist monk I know, and he, before ordaining as a Theravada monk, he used to be a Hindu monk. He was a Hindu monk for several years, and he studied the Vedas, he studied their system of meditation, and they too have something similar to the jhanas that Buddhism has. They too knew about samadhi, although they would kind of describe it differently and use some different terminology, but there's some overlap there. And the Hindus have this concept called the Atman. So it's kind of like it's like this big universal self. It's like the one big universal self. And our kind of individual self can merge with the big individual, you know, the big self of the universe. That's kind of their view. That's the Atman. It's like this universal consciousness. And that's where they get this view of like, we are all one. But Buddhism begs to differ, saying, well, we are all zero, though, because there's not self in any of this. However, where there is an interesting overlap, according to my monk friend, is when one attains the sixth jhana, the base of infinite consciousness, that is what the Hindus are referring to when they talk about this Atman, this merging with the Atman. It's like this big cosmic self. Okay, base of infinite consciousness. So the Hindus are like, right. That's your Atman. So they would call Atman what Buddhism would call the sixth jhana, according to my friend. And he's practiced in both of the systems. And I have no reason to doubt him here. Anyway, just saying, there is some interesting overlap from the two religions there. Okay, so now there were some great questions. Now, you'll notice I actually didn't give you a whole lot of details about each of those jhanas. You know what I mean? You would think in such a thick book, surely there's tons more to know. And you know, like I said earlier, actually you're going to come up frustratingly empty-handed with juicy details, just what it feels like, etc. Now, there's a lot said about the causes which get you there. There's a great deal said about that. The Buddha's all about putting those causes. But what happens once you actually get there? He says very little. And I feel that the Buddha was wise to say that little, because, as I said earlier, it's outside of normal experience. And our regular language we would use just cannot really do it justice, you know? It's just, no matter what words we try to use, we sort of cheapen the experience, you know? We just can't really do it justice. Like, it's almost like, imagine you went to the French Louvre, okay? Let's say you're an art fan of some sort. And so you looked at all these amazing, famous paintings in the Louvre. And, you know, maybe there was some painting in the Louvre which was, to your mind, the best painting ever that you ever saw. And you just stared at it for like an hour. And you were amazed. This made it worth it. You went to France especially to see this, you know, and it just totally made the trip worth it. And, you know, that painting to you was just magic, okay? But then you go back to your friends here, maybe in Malaysia, and they're not really art fans, okay? And you're like trying to tell them about your trip, and you're like, well, I went to the Louvre and I saw this one painting, and oh my goodness, I stared at it for a whole hour. It was amazing. You wouldn't believe the texture. It was by this author. It had that thing and this detail, and this person you're talking to is like, yeah, so what? You know, like, they just don't really get it. They just don't really care. You know, it's not their thing. It's not their... they don't have a taste for it, you know? So no matter how you try to share your enthusiasm, they just don't really mirror that enthusiasm back to you. In fact, they're just sort of like, eh, whatever. And then you're like, what do you mean, whatever? It was the best, you know? So it can be kind of a disappointment, you know, when we try to share these things. It's a very personal experience, right? It's a very personal experience. It was indeed special to us, and it really meant so much to us. So the jhanas are like this, and we can try to describe it, but we are likely going to just run into frustration when the person we're talking to just doesn't really believe it, doesn't really see it, you know, doesn't really, I don't know, they're just not that excited for you, they're just not that, you know, you can't take them there, you know, they had to be there.